There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This week on the Mike Wise Show, our guest is one of the most fun members of the NBA family. He's the White Mamba, and he's standing by. But first, Darlene, do your thing!
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
This week on the Mike Wise Show, a guy I've been trying to get on forever. Okay, not that long, but still. Brian Scalabrine, the White Mamba, welcome to the program.
Mike, you sent me one DM. No, actually, you told me to follow you back. I followed you back instantly. Then you asked me to come on. I'm like, yeah, all right, let's get it done. And I'm not one of these guys. Like, do people ask you, hey, Mike, I need you on my podcast 2 weeks from tomorrow. Like, I can't, now. Can we do it now? Like, right now? I can do it now. Okay. I don't know what I'm doing 2 weeks from tomorrow. I can't even tell my wife 2 weeks from tomorrow I can go on a date. I'm definitely not telling you I'm going on the podcast. Mike hits me, Scout, now. I hit him with now. We're getting it done.
Yeah, I love it. Like, you have all kinds of insights. One, I know you were passionate about this morning, and I on the NBA Serious show with my friend Frank Isola, the Kevin Love, brain fart, laziness, childish, just slap at the ball. Your thoughts? I mean, I saw the video and I was just like, that's the kind of stuff you do at the park at the end of like the community center run.
Mike, if you were on my team, you wouldn't do that at the park. I promise you. You would hear it from me and you would never play with me again. There's lines that you draw, right? Like we're all players. We've all played and we've all been frustrated. Jeez, me more than anybody. I was frustrated that I wasn't very good. You know, like that's like everyone's frustrated. But you don't like hurt your team with your frustration, or at least you don't like outright try to do it, you know. And I'm fine. Like I'm one of these guys. I'm cool, man. You make mistakes, it's all good. But I'm really down on 13 minutes of my statement with no questions either. You know, don't you think you got to open it up? Like, Kevin, do you need to change the scenery? Kevin, do you think that like it's just best to move on? You had a great year here. You won that championship, but maybe it's time. Maybe you're frustrated because of the losing, and maybe they need to get rid of you too. So no questions. That was frustrating. And I'm a little bit down on the precedent that it might set around the NBA.
I think you're right. And I know it's hard. It's amazing to me. You guys have the passion you do every day because it's painful to watch some of these games before the playoffs, because you can see guys basically, giving up layups, red carpet defense, and not getting out and getting in someone's grill on the perimeter. And unless you're fighting for a job, I get it. You're trying to get right and ready for the playoffs and you don't want to exhaust yourself. But that kind of stuff, it felt like it was LeBron-esque from game five with against the Celtics years ago when he was in Cleveland before Miami, where it's just like, wait, you need to go if you're this unhappy.
Yeah, Mike, I think there's a way to fix this. Like we really missed the boat. They thought the Supermax contract would keep players. I think we need to incentivize players with their contracts moving forward when they play well in the regular season. And maybe it's something along the lines of some absurd amount of money, but very, very short-term contracts. So if you have a Julius Randle type of year, maybe you should be allowed to make $45 million the next year. And then if you do it again, maybe you should be allowed to make $45 million the next year. So I just don't feel like... In the NBA right now, you had, at the start of the season, 30 guys trying to win an MVP. And then once those guys got hurt and now they're not a part of that discussion, I don't think those guys are playing hard anymore. And so what is the incentive for guys to bring it? So I wish there was a way to incentivize the regular season so we don't – so you know, when people vote at the end of the year, and I don't think first, second, or third team all NBA. I think it needs to be more expansive than that. There has to be a way to you can, and these guys are smart, and the collective bargaining agreement is 800 pages. So there has to be a way for them to figure out where guys will bring it every single night. And it's not just to for seeding, or it's not just for if you're on your original team who you were drafted by, you'll get a supermax contract. I want to find out ways to incentivize players for bringing it throughout the regular season.
You speak into the choir, because the whole load management thing, one, it sounds like a bowel movement. It doesn't even sound like resting yourself. And two, it's just like, you know, is if you're that one kid that gets a shot to go to a game with his dad a year, and Steph Curry is on load management, it breaks your heart. You know, like, it doesn't do anything for you as a fan growing up and embracing the league.
Yeah, maybe less games is the answer. Yeah. You know, like, you know, you play your division, you know, three times each, and then you go out and you just play, you know, each team one time. I don't know. It'd be nice to see if the NBA can make some adjustments. Clearly, this year during the pandemic, you know, I get it. Like, there's not a lot of fans in the building anyways, but I get it. This year, there's too many games, and you know, with the fact that teams are playing back to back at home, so you know, there's no fan fatigue or anything like that, because there's just not that many seats available. But I do think this could be a good time. Just like the pandemic has probably will improve life some way, you know, like in the future, in the next 5 years, I don't know, like there'll be some things, maybe it's Zoom calls, I don't know, I have no idea. Maybe the NBA can take in the next 5 years and really improve what they did. Like, for instance, when they went to the bubble, the play-in tournament, that was awesome. And they picked it up this year. I really do believe that those three games that we see during the play-in tournament will be awesome. And now that can keep on going forward. So hopefully the NBA can find out some ways to incentivize the regular season, because I do think like the hardcore NBA fans are a little bit frustrated with what we're seeing this year.
Yeah. One of the reasons I brought you on, not only because I've always liked your commentary and I've been on with you and Frank, but more so I love what you said about the Jokic MVP, Nikola Jokic. This is a guy, Jokic, who's clearly had the best season in the league for a team that's, you know, a legitimate contender. And to me, if I was voting when I voted, that's what I always thought. If you had one of the best seasons in the league, if not the best, on a title contending team, and I think the Nuggets are, even though LeBron gets healthy and who knows, I feel like it's an obvious thing. And yet you said on the Sirius program, and you're right, only the media has acknowledged it. And it's almost like players, fans, everybody else is like, wait a minute, hold on. We're not going to give this up right away. I don't get it.
It's like the media who has votes, Mike, it's going to be a landslide. For anybody that like follows the NBA, his impact, the fact that he's played in all the games, like all that stuff matters. But maybe it's hard for, you know, the NBA players, and maybe it's hard for fans to look at. Like, Jokic is a generational talent. If you love basketball and you watch him, I watch him and I laugh. I'm laughing on air when I'm supposed to keep it serious. Like, he makes the simplistic play, and I'm sorry. He makes the difficult play look so simple when he's out there, and it's comical to me how he dominates the game. And how it's comical to me how he destroys guys inside out. You got Rudy Gobert on me, I'm going to pop and get 50 on him. You put a small guy on me, I'm going to go into the block. You double team me, I'm going to pick you apart. And guys go out, it doesn't matter. Whoever's playing with Jokic is a plus. So it's a hands down thing. But players, and they did the same thing with Steph Curry. Yeah. I think it's like this. I think when the media loves a guy, I think the players initially was like, we can't like the same people that the media like.
Totally.
They don't know. And now, like, after Steph Curry won and he's an all-time great player, now the players start giving him the credit. When the media goes like, all right, now who are we looking for somewhere else? Giannis doesn't get a ton of credit. You know, now it's Jokic. And it's like the new guy that comes along, it's like, we're not going to like the same people the media likes.
Yeah.
Like the guys on TNT. It was funny how Shaq was saying that like Embiid is the MVP. The guy missed like a quarter of the season.
He had a great season, but you're right. He wasn't, Jokic wasn't hurt. for Steph Curry about 5 years ago, before he got the second one, he said, I said something to him, I go, do you think guys look down on you because, you know, basically you're this light-skinned brother who was the son of a former player. And he almost like, you got to think, like he almost said, like there was some little racial component, almost like I wasn't black enough or something. And at first I thought, okay, is there a racial issue with Jokic? I think we're past all that now. I don't think guys think if you're born in the hood that some guy from Europe is taking my job now and I can't respect. I don't think that's it at all. I think it's what you said. There's this reluctance to give the new guy the respect he deserves, even though he's, you know, and plus, let's be honest, the guy, you measure his vertical with a Metro card. And to me, like my 10-year-old, I just show him, I go, look at this guy. He plays with an economy of movement and he's burying people just because he knows how to play the game.
Yeah. But there's also one thing, the players, like, there's always a battle between the players and the media. It's not, I think it's probably going the other way. It wasn't like it was, like when I've heard in the 80s that the players and the media would hang out and they'd go have a beer after the games. And the media people would write the tough story and the players would be like, yeah, you're right. I wasn't very good. I got to be better. And it's very like, well, that's the media. They don't know what they're talking about. And we're the players and we know exactly what we're talking about. But you know, I do think it will be interesting because there's a lot of media that likes to placate the players, and it'll be interesting if they end up, you know, like following suit to what the players are saying. When it's clear as day to anybody that follows the game that Jokic is the most valuable player in the NBA for many reasons. And I even went a step further today, Mike.
Yeah.
Like, can we give Julius Randle his due? Ugh. Can we give Chris Paul his due? Can we give Damian Lillard his due and even Steph Curry his due as well? Can we give those guys who are not LeBron, Harden, KD, you know, not the big giant name, and maybe even Giannis in this situation, even though Giannis has taken a few more games off this year. Like, can we reward the guys who are showing up every day? I'm telling you, Mike, if Damian Lillard took 10 games off, he would average 5 more points a game because he would just be fresh. There is a little bit of battle of attrition here. And the guys who are playing night in and night out and still putting in the numbers, how do we not associate that with dominance? That is hard to do night after night after night.
Great point. I mean, the whole consistency angle has been thrown away. I remember Shaq back in the day, like when you played right before, he was basically like, hey, the three-peat, before the three-peat, he was like, as long as we get right and ready. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, they went in as the third seed. They could have been the all-time greatest team, but they went in as the third seed, and Kobe and Shaq were healthy because they had all these, you know, issues. And but he knew that once they got to the playoffs, they could be, you know, they could be better and they could be right and ready. So you're right. There's got to be an incentive. I know the union will never go for what Jeff Van Gundy used to say. It was like, you know, give money to the winners. We'll see guys fight tooth and nail over. But, you know, that's never going to happen.
I think they're right. Cash. No direct deposit. Like right. Can you imagine like a big giant sack with a dollar sign, like in the cartoons back in the day, and the captain goes up and grabs it. Hey, like,
you're right. No,
they split it up. Good luck splitting that up.
Well, you always mock yourself as a player. I personally, I think it's fun to say, oh, the white mom. You're like, dude, you were a second round pick. And you lasted, you know, like 12 years. You had like a 12-year professional career when you talk about overseas.
I was fortunate, Mike. Here's the thing.
And you worked hard. You hit a lot of big jumpers. You turned into a much better three-point shooter. And I know you still got game because you were busting guys' asses in the big three. So I kind of laugh. It's almost like a lazy narrative, like, oh, Scal, you know, he had to go into the house. He really could have, like, no, he had a freaking good career.
Well, Mike, so I is fortunate. And I really, and I'm not just blowing smoke. Like, me being on a rotational player on the New Jersey Nets, and they're going to the finals my first year and second year, I learned. And playing, for me, it's always been like this, Mike. Playing with superstar players, and it's easier. It's easy for a lot of guys to play with superstar players, but it was real easy when you're playing with Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Rajon Rondo, you know, you're playing with Jason Kidd, Kenyon Martin, like you're playing with like these guys, Richard Jefferson, Kerry Kittle, like you're playing with like elite players. It is so easy to go out there for me and do my role because, Mike, like a little secret, I was never a star. I wasn't a star in high school. I wasn't a star in junior college. Wasn't a star in at 4 year. I was never a star. So I was like a supreme role player, and it just fit with the teams that I was on. So I was, that's fortunate. If I was on another team, I got drafted by a team that was not very good. Who are the first people they're letting go when the season doesn't turn out that well? The 12th man. When you go to the finals, what do? They bring back the 12th man. So, no question that, Mike, I had to work, and I worked hard every single day, you know, sometimes twice a day, whatever I had to do. But I was fortunate. And that's just being realistic. And just like some other guys have misfortune, they just get drafted to the wrong team. And there's probably 30% of the NBA that are going to be really good no matter what. And I think the rest of us kind of interchangeable. You know, there's overseas guys that are better, just didn't get the right opportunity.
I saw it with like when I covered the Knicks back in the day, like I used to go to a Y and try to play, and there'd be always some guy that was just dunking over people. And I go, what's the difference between that guy and John Starks? Like, you know, he could shoot. He could. John Starks, man, he had this, and he had a work ethic that was incredible. And you know, and that was you in many ways. Two more for Brian Scalabrine, because he's got a huge busy schedule. I had a conversation with, I don't know, do you know Andy Thompson, Clay's uncle at all?
A little bit.
NBA photographer guy.
Yeah, he was around, but yeah.
Yeah, great dude. He was an NBA photographer. Like, he's been with the NBA forever. Andy, we had a great conversation about 3 years ago at the Marriott. I was showing him clips because I was such a proud dad, and I'm sure you'll be the same. Like, show him clips of my son playing this AAU tournament and splitting these kids from the Gauchos and thinking, this is my dad, my son's going to be white. And I go, but then I told him, I said, yeah, but you know, all these kids, African-American kids, like they just play more. They play like, what shouldn't I get? And he goes, he looks at me, he goes, that's the problem right there. And I go, what do you mean the problem? He goes, we just did a PSA with all the NBA guys. And we thought, let's get a recognizable white player. The only guy we could come up with at that time was Kevin Love. And he goes, we both agreed that like, we're at a point where guys are crossover stars now, color doesn't matter. But he did say that he thought there were a lot of, you know, white parents now that pushed their kids toward other sports because they were scared to compete for scholarships and I thought, that's ridiculous. He goes, let your kid play as long as he wants. As a kid growing up, you know, in Washington and later playing at USC, did your parents ever steer you away from hoops?
My mom, like, Mike, it's so different now.
Yeah.
And I played 7 AAU games. Like, just conceptualize that.
Wow.
My daughter, who's now 14, has probably played in 70, you know, or 100 games, right? And we just like, come on, man. I just went to the park and I played every day. And my version of playing against better players was – when the guy got off work, he was 24 years old and I was 14. Like there's no better player when you're young to go against like a grown man who played in high school. You know, like you are going to get toasted. So I grew up like that. And, but I just, here's the thing, Mike, I struggled in life until I found sports, and sports was why I felt normal. Like everywhere else, I didn't feel normal. Socially, I didn't feel normal. Basketball, in the classroom, I didn't feel normal. But anytime I was competing, it was like this free-for-all to do whatever you want. You could be hyper-focused on one thing. So that trumps like intimidation. I know a lot of kids or white kids go into a gym and they're the only white guy there. Like a lot of people would look at that. All I saw was this is a chance to hoop. Like I know it existed. I'm not stupid. I understand it existed, but when it was sports and competition was like a drug. I was an addict and I needed it. And like drug addicts will do whatever it takes to get it, and they don't care what they're doing, right?
And you were a hoop addict.
Yeah, I had to compete, and it didn't matter. People were green or there were killers out there. Yeah. It doesn't matter to me. I needed my fix and I was going to get it no matter what. And then Mike, when I would play against my friends and I started getting better and I'd play against my friends, thinking this is like very much drug addict. Like we'd go to the park and we win 11-0 and my friends were like, you can't play anymore. So I got in my little car and I drove to Seattle and I found runs there, which was, it was an hour away because that's I needed awesome. My fix, right? And Mike, I was never satisfied when I won, ever. It was like a wasted day. I wanted to lose day after day after day. I had to lose. And so like black guys, white guys in the gym, this, that, craziness, fights going on. Like I didn't care. I needed my fix and I was going to get it. And that was my life. And that was my life from the time I'm 17 years old until even now. Like I'm playing tonight. I'm going to an AAU practice and I'm going to like bust up a bunch of kids because and I'm not as bad now. I need my fix. I need my hit. My hit is competition.
Oh, that's so good. I identify with a lot of, I was never nearly as good as you and played NAI. Was the guy in the NAI team at Hawaii Pacific when like we're down 20, like, wise, you can't hurt us, go in. But it was like when I was growing up in Hawaii, like the same thing, like I went to Barbers Point, this military base, and it was like all African-American guys that were men, but it was like this pride thing that like, oh, it's Bird. All right, come here, Bird. Like, and it was like a pride thing if they called you a good white player. And it was sort of like, wow, you're accepted. Totally. All right, this has been great. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, you've got a Celtics championship ring. You know that team better than anyone as an analyst and someone who's ranked. Can these guys that are stumbling to the finish line, can they turn it around?
I don't think it's actually turning it around, Mike. And this sounds like an excuse. And at the beginning, I didn't like this excuse. But the role players aren't very good. And their starters are very good. And I think there are about eight guys that I would really count on. You know, your bigs are Tristan Thompson and Robert Williams. You go Tatum, Brown, Kemba, Smart. You go with Peyton Pritchard. Who am I forgetting right now?
Jump in,
Evan
Bruce.
Evan Fournier. So you've got like, and playoff rotation is going to be eight. I do think, Mike, I do think this team can win if they're all eight are playing. But I actually don't think if they're missing one or two guys, I actually think it's too much to overcome. So they might just do it by committee. And by the way, I could be wrong, but I'm done like emotionally investing in 9 through 15 saying like, you know, like I'm projecting my life into them. This is an unreal opportunity for you to establish who you're going to be for the rest of your life. This game is not a meaningless game to you. This is a Super Bowl for you.
Yeah.
Like the Oklahoma City game was your Super Bowl for you to establish yourself as a player that they can count on. And people ignored that. When I played and I got my chance, it was life or death. It was life or death. I had to deliver or else, man. Like, and I would know, and I knew it was coming, and players would go out, and I would have outer body experiences because this is my opportunity. But I feel like these guys are just like, some of these guys were laughing and joking on the sideline when we were down by 10 to Oklahoma City the other day. Just like, so I'm done with that. I'm just putting all of my emotional eggs into the basket of the top eight guys, and hopefully these guys deliver, and we'll see what happens.
You just wish someone in their family, Brad or somebody to listen to, just went up to him and say, you know, there's guys who give their left arm to play one possession in the NBA, one possession, and you're given an opportunity to play some real minutes, do something with it, or you're done. Like, it's just so – it kills me because it's like there's nothing worse than wasted opportunity.
Yeah, Mike, like the funniest story. Here's a funny story for you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This is my teammates in New Jersey – like they got it. And I would not hide the fact that I knew I was not better than them. And I was ready every day. And so one day we're in the hotel and the guys, you know, they're all dressed up and they're going out to Miami Beach, right? Elevator door opens up and they see me there and like, what's up, Scout? I got my gym clothes on. And we're getting, they're like, what are you doing? And they're like, you know, I'm like, I'm heading to the gym, man. And they're like, why? I'm like, because you guys are going to be out all night and I got to be ready. Like, you guys stay all the time you need in South Beach. Do whatever you need to do. I'll let you know right now. Tomorrow, if you don't have it, I'm ready. I don't need your minutes, but if you want to give them to me, I'm ready. The elevator door opens. I get off from the gym. They go out to South Beach. The next night, I don't know. I played like 25 minutes that night. But that's like, you can't.
That's awesome.
If I'm another person, I'm like, oh, man, I should go hang out with my guys on South Beach. No, that's not how this works.
You should tell those guys. Why can't you tell those guys that story?
I don't.
9 through 15, Celtics.
I won't tell my kids this story. They got to figure out on their own how this thing is going to work. And there are going to be guys that are going to be like, hey, you know what, Mike? I can go out in Utah. I'm pretty sure the next night in Utah, they're not going to need me. There's a few cities where I'm good.
That's hilarious.
If it's a Monday night in Indiana, I'm good. Like I can go out that night.
But you guys got to do it
on the weekend. I got to be ready.
This is a segment. I'm going to text Isola. This is a segment. The cities where you might not get the run you think. The cities you will. Atlanta, Miami, New York. You know, like, that's hilarious. All right, man. Well, this has been great. And best of luck to you the rest of the season. I hope to see you in person when this freaking COVID thing completely ends.
All right, Mike. You know what? DM me or whatever anytime.
All right. See you, Brian.
That was dope.
Thanks to my guest, Brian Scalabrine, for his time and insight. Thanks also to my producer, Bruce Bernstein. Bruce, hit us with those promos.
Thank you, Mike. Isn't Scal the best? I love that guy. You know,
unbelievable.
After Tommy Heinsohn died, Celtics legend, Scal stepped in as their TV analyst, and he's been really, really good. He fits just like a glove in there. So thanks, Scal, for all you do. Thanks to our incredible editor, Kristen Woolley. Please check out all of our Pure Hoops media shows, Full Court with Jenny Fisher and Kara Kay, with the best in college hoop each Tuesday. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto Strong and Aaron Berlin every Wednesday. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Mike's pal Monica McNutt and King McClure drops on Thursday. BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman have the Pure Hoops podcast each Friday. And, of course, my man Mike with a new Mike Wise show every Monday. And if you'd like to hear some selected choice discussions from all of our shows, subscribe to the Pure Hoops Media Quick Hitters. And please check out our YouTube channel with many great segments like Mike's incredible interviews with Lakers Governor Jeannie Buss, Mark Cuban, Mark Lazary, the Bucks owner, and the very last sit down with the late NBA commissioner, David Stern. Go to YouTube, search for Pure Hoops Media, Mike.
Thank you, Bruce. We'd like to welcome another sponsor to our program. It's unbelievable the sponsors we're picking up now. This one is, of course, an old favorite, Rug Doctor, steam and matted dirt, carpet cleaning disaster, Rug Doctor. All right. Thanks, Rug Doctor. We are one day closer to beating the COVID-19 pandemic into submission. When you qualify for the vaccination, please get it. But until the country reaches herd immunity, keep your guard up. I got my shots a couple weekends ago. I think at least 30 to 40% of the country has it now. We're going in the right direction. Wear the mask in public to protect yourself and others until the CDC or someone in your school or work tells you it's okay not to. Wash your hands, keep your distance, and be considerate of others. And don't listen to that idiot Joe Rogan or Tucker Carlson. And if you know a nurse, doctor, or frontline worker, tell them thanks and keep them in your prayers. Until next time, aloha.
The Mike Wise Show used to be called The Wise Ass Show, but it remains a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.